Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Julie Sokolow. Julie is the director of the new documentary, Barefoot, The Mark Bomber Story. The film profiles an activist who walked barefoot across America to protest climate change. She's also the director of the feature documentaries, Woman on Fire and Aspie Seeks Love. Hey, Julie, it's so great to have you on the Cool Tools podcast. How are you?
Thanks so much for having me. We've been emailing for a while now, and finally we get to chat.
Yeah, I'm so delighted to meet you, and I'm really looking forward to your tool suggestions.
Yeah, I interpreted this quite creatively.
That's perfect. That's what we want. Tool in the broadest sense of the word.
Yeah. So Julie, the first tool, it's interesting because as soon as you mentioned transcendental meditation, my first thought went to David Lynch, because I know that he is really into transcendental meditation, and I think there's something that you have to say about both of those.
As a tool.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I guess it was about 7 to 10 years ago that I started to hear David Lynch talk about doing transcendental meditation. And at that time, you know, I was just a huge Lynch fan and really wondered like where his, you know, creativity came from and really resonated with it as well. The dreamlike quality of it. And, you know, I had experiences in my college years of like dabbling with psychedelic drugs and expanding my mind and was kind of looking for something more sustainable so I wouldn't have to like drop acid every weekend for the rest of my life to expand my consciousness. So, you know, I kind of took an interest that way and also was kind of struggling with anxiety that I felt like was really confining my life in different ways. You know, I had like a fear of flying, and that's like very inconvenient when your job requires you to get on an airplane. Uh-huh. You know, I had like a mini panic attack on an airplane once that was like thankfully very self-contained and no one knew it was happening but me. But, you know, I was like, okay, I need to look into meditation or something. And, you know, I did some yoga or this or that. And a lot of things help, but I did go through like the training, and I'm a pretty like, I don't know, skeptical atheist person with like some hippie spirituality, like that's very vague and cosmic sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe a paradoxical set of things. But yeah, I went through the training and, you know, right away it clicked. And I think for someone like me who is pretty, has like a lot of energy and can be a little bit all over the place, like, I didn't think I would be able to latch on to meditation of any kind. And the fact that it was mantra-based really helped me because like repeating the word over and over again in my mind gave me something to concentrate on. So like, I assume that there's other forms of meditation out there, you know, that are just as good. But I really like the mantra aspect of it. So like, when you asked me about cool tools, like the first thing that came to mind was a mantra. Like there's no cooler tool than a mantra.
And how do you use it? What is your use of this tool? Do you do it daily? Do you do it kind of regularly, but not daily? And then how long do you do it? And, you know, just describe your practice with it.
Yeah. So when I first started meditating, I guess that was 7 years ago, I did it twice a day, every day, and you do it 20 minutes at a time. So like you wake up and pretty immediately you sit down to meditate for 20 minutes. You go throughout your day and then sit down again like before dinner to do another 20-minute session. And it kind of helps to like punctuate the day nicely and have these little breathers and just kind of like a feeling of wiping the slate clean and just like sitting with yourself and finding a bit of calm and control to enter the next part of your day. So I was doing it very much like as suggested when I first started. And I think now, you know, I definitely do it a lot less, but I do it sort of on an as needed basis. So when I found myself in like the last few years on an airplane, I'll do it. Or
you can do it in, sitting in the airplane seat. That works for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's cool because
you do the mantra silently. You don't need to like say it out loud.
Right. It's totally silent. Okay. And you just look like you're sleeping to a person on a plane, but you're sitting there repeating your mantra and possibly having a semi-psychedelic experience, you know?
Is it that powerful that you can, it feels like a psychedelic experience?
So sometimes it's very boring and it's just very hard to get into. And, you know, these intrusive, stressful thoughts come in and you're just like, oh, you know, but you just sit there and you try to have this, the discipline to just get through it. And other times it can be this very, for me, like euphoric experience where I'll sort of get past all of the mental clutter and have like interesting visual light patterns come in or a sense of boundless, pure consciousness. You know, I think as like David Lynch would say, there's a great segment. I know you guys have talked about like the masterclass website before, and David Lynch has a masterclass, and I think it's like maybe the last episode of his sessions is a whole bit on TM.
Right. So if someone out there listening decides, oh, I want to try this. This is a tool that I at least want to see if it works for me. What would you suggest, like step one be?
I would probably check out David Lynch's book, Catching the Big Fish. And because it's just like such a quick little read. And if you like what he says and it resonates, then kind of like move forward and maybe look at some of the studies that have been done on it. There's a book by Dr. Norman Rosenthal called Transcendence that gets more into like the science of it. And he was like a pioneer of, you know, looking into seasonal affective disorder and light therapy. And he, you know, talks about the benefits of TM. So I would probably like read those and, you know, also like there's instructors in every city and just get a sense for that. And, you know, there's other kinds of meditation than TM as well. Right. So
TM, at least when I was younger, it was a course that you paid for and you were assigned your mantra stuff, and it was sort of like almost like a brand, a TM brand. But it was something you had to pay for. Did you go through that, and would you recommend that route if you, after your initial reading, were kind of persuaded that there was something you wanted to pursue?
It's a really great question, and I have very mixed feelings about it because, you know, they attach a fairly substantial price tag to learning through an official certified TM instructor, which I find kind of sad because I think it should just be more accessible. And, you know, they always say, like, we will meet you halfway and we'll, you know, bring that cost down. So I would, you know, if people have the means to pay for it, absolutely. If people are struggling more financially, I would probably try a meditation app or look into, you know, a local center. Obviously, we're in pandemic, so it's, I've heard good things about Headspace and these more affordable ways to just get into meditation. But I think the biggest thing about it is just like, you know, for people who say like, I'm too anxious to ever sit down and meditate for 20 minutes, you know, definitely try a mantra-based meditation because it gives you something to concentrate on. It's not just like sitting there doing nothing.
Yeah. So, I mean, is there anything more to it than sitting there and repeating the mantra in your head? Do you have to do anything else, or is that really it?
That's it. Yeah, it's very easy, and they make a point to tell you how easy it is.
Mm-hmm. And then what does the course, I mean, what are you doing with the course, or why are there other kind of hurdles or other tricks to doing that you're taught, or is it, I mean, so what is the course involved then?
I think the course involves like discussing the sort of history of it and, you know, a little bit about what you can expect as far as the experience from it and just kind of getting you primed in the mindset to like become part of, I guess, the community or like have it, have you latch on to it. So they do a little bit of a, you know, ceremony around you learning. And it has a little vibe of spirituality around it, but I guess it's just a traditional nod to like the folks who created it. But, you know, I have not, for example, stayed in touch with like, you know, fellow meditators that I met in classes that were group classes. Like it's very much the kind of thing where you can kind of go in with the teacher for like a few sessions to learn and then walk away with your mantra and you have this tool for the rest of your life.
Hmm. Okay.
How did you end up getting your mantra? Was it assigned to you, Julie?
Yeah, they assign you a mantra and it's supposed to, you know, be the secret, which I think it's just kind of for the theater of it to make mm-hmm. it feel very important in your life. So really, I do wonder if you could take almost any sort of sound or, you know, say om over and over again and that would suffice. But you know, they give you your specialized mantra, and I've never told anyone mine. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that, you know, maybe we're all walking around with the same mantra. It's very possible. But I don't really care because...
Google it.
Yeah, exactly. Just Google it. But I think at the end of the day, like, you know, the idea of being able to, you know, focus your mind on something other than your stressful thoughts, whether that's when you're like sitting on a plane having a panic attack or trying to get to sleep, like having a tool like that, I still think is useful.
That sounds really cool.
Great. That's a great suggestion.
Yeah.
So tell us about your number two tool pick, something you would use in making a documentary or a film.
Yeah, so my second pick is a cork board, and I have it on my wall.
A physical cork board, something with cork on it. Is that right?
Yeah, I have a cork board on my office wall. It's mounted up there. It's, I guess, 3 feet wide and 2 feet tall. And basically, like, you know, as a documentary filmmaker, I direct and edit my work. And the first feature documentary I ever tried to edit, I was just like, I don't even know where to start. There's so much footage. How do I construct a story out of all this footage? And, you know, so that was just a kind of rough experience. And for the second documentary that I did, my producer gave me this cork board and was like, map out the story structure, take it, you know, scene by scene. And so that's what I did. And it's really been a huge help to me in my process with editing. And you know, because if you sit down at the computer to edit a feature length film and you don't know where to start, it's that kind of blank page syndrome. So having those note cards up on the board to be like, no, I'm actually just editing this scene today. And the scene is like part of this bigger structure. So it's great for any creative person.
Is the board big enough to hold enough cards for a documentary or feature length film? Do you need, I mean, I've seen storyboards that, you know, cover walls where, of course, there may be, you know, pacing out scene by scene or beat by beat. Do you have like stacking of cards behind each other on the board? How do you use it?
Yeah, it's big enough for my purposes, actually, for sure. And you know, I like to kind of lay out like act one, act two, act three, and, you know, maybe there's 10 cards for each act, something like that. And each card might represent, you know, a 2 minute segment up to a 10 minute segment. So it works itself out.
And the advantage of a cork board is that you can move these things around. You could use a magnetic board would be just as well, I would guess, right?
Yeah, it would be just as well.
Yeah. This is kind of technical stuff, but what program are you using to edit? Do you use Premiere or Final Cut or something else?
Yeah, I use Premiere. And I started off as a very non-technical person approaching filmmaking. So I started off with iMovie. I went to Final Cut X or whatever, the one that like all the true professionals hate.
Right.
And then I finally graduated to Adobe Premiere and love the, you know, subscription with the Creative Cloud and everything.
Right. So I have a question. or maybe you can make a recommendation. So I'm, you know, I use Adobe, but I came from the film still photography portion of it. And there's Lightroom, which was a basically kind of like a workflow. It's like how to manage all your images. And gradually over time, it took on a lot of the stuff that Photoshop used to do. But the main thing was is that you could import all your still images and you could sort them in 1,000 different ways, and they could be present in more than one folder as you decided kind of what you did with it. I am looking for the equivalent of Lightroom for like Premiere or video so that I can input all kinds of video that I don't even know where it's going to end up, and I want to kind of keep track of it. Do you have a tool to recommend for that?
I don't really. I'm sorry to say. Like, I just use Premiere for everything at this point. And I can't even tell you like how much footage I've, you know, for a feature doc, it's like having 100 hours of footage, and that right. is all sitting in like a Premiere project.
Right.
So, you know, I have learned different skills to just like keep it better organized over the years, but using like markers so that you can search, you know, like, even having transcription, you know, stored sort of on the clips. So like, oh, when this person said this, I can kind of like search and bring it right up.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Okay. So you have transcription and you can search in Premiere onto the transcriptions.
Yeah. So I had this, I guess it was called, it's called Transcriptive. And, you know, it's this program that kind of plugs into Adobe Premiere, and, you know, it's this kind of AI transcription, you know, program. So then you can send off clips to be instantly
right.
Transcribed.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Well, anyway, that was, I'm looking for it still. You know, I had 11 hours of footage just to do this 20 minute YouTube video, and I wasn't even sure all of it was going to go into that one. And I wanted to have some way to kind of keep track of all the video that I'm making when I don't even know where it's going. And that's been a problematic, but somebody out there make Lightroom for video. So tell us about your third cool tool pick.
Yeah. So my third cool tool pick is just Timbuktu backpacks. And I guess a lot of folks probably associate Timbuktu with messenger bags, but I'm a backpack gal. You know, I was very geeky growing up and like always just had a backpack full of heavy textbooks, and that carried into my adult life. So just being like a city dweller and living in Pittsburgh and really not, you know, having a car and just walking everywhere and busing everywhere, I like to have like a backpack that just feels like my whole life is there. So I really love their bags. They're like, you know, I used to have all these really flimsy bags that would kind of dissolve in, you know, a year. And then I got the Spire, which is just like very, very durable. It's like very waterproof and it can carry a 15-inch laptop or a bunch of groceries. And has a ton of pockets. And I just feel like it's really well made. Like it looks brand new, like 4 years later. And then I got a different one, the Tuck Pack, which is like a lot more attractive and very lightweight. And that was really perfect for the gym. It's just like kind of roll up bag where when you open it up, it's just like one giant compartment. So you can throw your sneakers in there and a set of clothes and like, it also has like a nice water bottle holder and all that stuff. And I've gotten many compliments on the look of that bag. So I just feel like they, you know, have great construction. And it's cool on their website because they actually have like a 1 minute video for each bag to just kind of like show you how it works. So yeah, I mean, I'm not using bags as much during the pandemic, but
sure.
Still want to represent.
Uh-huh. So the kind of your everyday carry kind of bag is the Spire, and Timbuktu calls it a laptop backpack. I guess it's sort of the dimensions are fitted to fit most laptops, and it has a bunch of pockets, I guess. And what else do you like about it compared to other bags besides the heavy construction, or is there some other design niceties that draw you to it?
I think it's just mainly that durability. And, you know, when you're walking around the city and it starts raining on you, like you want something that feels just like totally waterproof. And it's got like a sort of Velcro, you know, top, the way it opens up with a latch. And I mean, I use it most often without a laptop in it, which is probably inefficient or something. So maybe if you don't want a laptop bag, go for the tuck pack, which is probably like, I think some of the reviews say it's good for hiking with and things like that.
It's kind of about the size of a day pack, and I would say. It's what I would call a day pack. Those are, don't have definitions, but I would use it as a day pack.
What do you guys use to carry your stuff?
I have an ancient, it's called Wise Walker from Japan, that has about 100 too many pockets. It has so many pockets everywhere, inside and outside, that I sometimes lose track of which pocket I put in. So I have to train myself to always put it in the same pocket, otherwise I'll never find it again. But it does have a lot of compartments to put things. And that was one of the reasons why I got it. And also, it's very, very light. But it's not made anymore, so I shouldn't talk about it.
I have a little ripstop backpack that zips up into a little ball, like smaller than a tennis ball. And I bring that with me. And then when I need to, like, you know, bring a water bottle or whatever, then I have it handy.
Yeah.
It's really nice to have.
Yeah. It's super, super light, those ripstop ones.
Yeah.
Do you guys go on like long walks with your bags, or are you more like using the car to get around these days?
No. Well, these days, yeah, all changed. But I would do long walks, week long walks with the day pack, and having our luggage moved separately. But these days I just take a bag like what Mark suggested for just a hour hike or something, where you're just taking a water bottle and maybe a snack bar or something. You don't really need a lot of weight. But this is like, I have a bag that I have my laptop in, and it's got my camera batteries, and it's got all the cords and all that kind of stuff. Then you want to have something that has a little bit more organization than just a lightweight bag. So it's kind of more like, I don't know, a work bag, I guess, something like that. But this is a good one. Timbuktu, they're great. You know, let's hear about your last tool that you have for us, of the four.
So my last recommendation is actually a book, and you guys said I could do a book. So, and I picked Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor E. Frankl. He's an Austrian psychiatrist and a Holocaust survivor. And he basically writes about how, you know, if you kind of change your attitude, you can change your life. So it's like this kind of cliche thing that if it was coming from literally anyone else, you would not want to hear it. But the fact that he's a Holocaust survivor gives it a ton of weight. And it's a beautiful book. And the first, it's kind of broken up into two parts. The first part is a memoir of his experience being a prisoner in Auschwitz. And kind of going through that experience as a psychiatrist and a psychologist and this, you know, highly educated person who could kind of detach himself a little bit to think about, like, how do I make, you know, how do I survive and what are my odds and what's going to get me through suffering? And, you know, he says that basically man can find meaning in spite of suffering. In fact, we can take suffering as an opportunity to triumph and to sort of have this, you know, spiritual moment of having a test of our character. And so it's kind of a relevant book. You know, it's obviously this bestseller that's looked at as an inspirational book for anybody to read. But in this moment that we're in with the pandemic, obviously there's a lot of suffering, there's a lot of death, there's a lot of trying to find meaning out of chaos. You know, one thing that was really difficult for Frankl in the concentration camp was the sense of this unending experience. They didn't know when it was going to end, if ever, and they were going to have this kind of light at the end of the tunnel of, you know, how do you find meaning and hope if you don't know if you have anything to look forward to? And so I think for people who have suffered the most during this time, it is an inspirational read. And, you know, some ways that he coped, some tools that, you know, it's a book full of tools, basically, of how to get through life. And, you know, one thing he says is to, obviously, you can locate meaning in your work. So when he was in the concentration camp, he was thinking about, you know, giving lectures about the psychology of concentration camps. So he was imagining himself like in front of a huge audience, like as though he was already finished with the experience that he was still in. And he thought about his wife. He kind of imagined her voice speaking to him and found kind of transcendence through that love, through nature. There's beautiful descriptions of these prisoners like watching a sunset together. And obviously, like people in the pandemic have found a lot of hope and calm through connecting with nature. There's laughter, you know, these moments when they were able to just laugh together or to put on a cabaret or, you know, laugh at one of the guards telling awful poetry, you know, just kind of off to themselves. And so I think it's a beautiful book. And the second half of the book is geared towards discussing the therapy that he developed, which is called logotherapy. And it's all about helping others like think towards the future and kind of set goals and find meaning in life. And that meaning isn't, you know, he kind of says we shouldn't be asking like, what is the ultimate meaning of life? We should be kind of taking it moment by moment, person by person, and see what life is asking of us in any given situation.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. And those are things that you found helpful for yourself personally.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel as though, you know, when I'm deciding who to make a documentary about, like, I really like making films about admirable people. So, you know, I made a film about Brooke Guinan, the first openly transgender firefighter in New York. And I see her as someone who like really brings out these principles that Frankel is talking about of like, she suffered a lot in her life. You know, she was bullied, she was ostracized for being transgender, and she became a role model for LGBTQ people. She took that experience of suffering and turned it into a triumph where, you know, she started recruiting women and LGBTQ people for the FDNY. So like, I look to people out in the world to inspire me who are doing that, making meaning out of challenging times. And I try to do it myself. I don't know if I'm any good at it, but we're all still learning, I think.
Well, that's really wonderful. I know it's a very well-known book, and it is a good reminder that if you are searching for meaning, this will be a tool that could help you.
Yeah.
So could you, in the last couple of minutes, tell us a little bit more about your newest project and maybe how people can view it?
Yeah. So my latest film is called Barefoot, the Mark Bomber Story. And it's about a writer and activist who decided to walk barefoot across the country in order to protest climate change. And he managed to walk over 700 miles completely barefoot. You know, he was filming himself the whole time, posting videos on YouTube. He's very funny and very inspiring kind of person who, you know, the New Yorker called him a compulsive social media diarist and likened him to Andy Kaufman. So he's just a really wonderful character. And sadly, I mean, people might remember the news coverage when he died on this walk. So the film is also about that. There's interviews with his friends and family to just kind of give a portrait of his life and the walk and also make meaning out of that situation. You know, we see his family struggling with the loss of their son. So yeah, that film is out now on Amazon and iTunes, and we played festivals with it. Our festival tour was cut short a bit by COVID, but we're glad to have the movie out now, especially like during election season. It came out at least a little bit before then, so it could maybe get into some folks, you know, people's minds.
Did you start the film before he died or after he died? In other words, was this a surprise to you, his death, or was this something, one of the reasons why you made it?
Yeah, so I was a fan of Mark's while he was alive. I was following his journey on Facebook and, you know, donating a little bit, tweeting about him, and hoped to collaborate with him at some point. And unfortunately, never got to. So I learned about his death, you know, on Facebook one day, and it was actually the day after Donald Trump's inauguration that he died. So it was like a very symbolic feeling weekend to have Trump rise to power, who's a climate change denier, and have this really powerful activist perish at the same time. It felt like dark times were ahead. But so I reached out to his family and wanted to help them tell his story. And luckily they said yes. And it was a beautiful collaboration. And I'm really happy that they stand behind the film.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you didn't really, didn't have the chance to kind of like film him while he was doing the walk. It was more for, you were able to access archival type footage of that.
Yeah. So he left for the walk in October 2016, and he was on the road for a little over 100 days and filmed himself every day. So I used all of that footage that he shot of himself.
Wow. So this called Barefoot, the Mark Bomber story?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll have a link in the show notes about that. I'm looking forward to seeing it myself.
Yeah. And Julie, did you tell me that, I think you told me that a really cool cartoonist we both know, Jim Rugg, did the poster for it. Is that right?
He did. And yeah, it's awesome.
Oh, good. Yeah. I love his work, and you can see it at barefootdocumentary.com. Really cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this documentary. I, as you know, Julie, I posted the trailer to Boing Boing a couple of days ago, and I got really excited just watching the trailer.
Oh, thanks, Mark. Yeah, it's, I appreciate you always posting our trailers over the years, like with Aspie Seeks Love. And
yeah, thank you, Julie. Great talking to you and connecting and catching up with you. Good luck with everything.
Thank you guys so much.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark from the Cool Tools Podcast. I want to thank you for being a listener to Cool Tools. And I also would like to let you know about our Patreon page. If you would like to support the Cool Tools Show, as well as our video channel, the website, and all the newsletters that we do, you can go to patreon.com/cooltools. That's just one word, Cool Tools, and pledge any amount you want. You could even pledge $1 a month. Every little bit helps. We have editors, we pay for transcribing costs, we pay our reviewers. Every bit of money that you contribute goes towards supporting the show. I'd like to give a shout out to our supporters of the Cool Tools Podcast. This week, I'd like to thank the following Patreon supporters: Bill Schuler, Bob Kay, Ryan Pelly, Carl D. Patterson, Chad Cosby, Chris Wieland, Chris Weirstook, Craig Tooker, Dan O'Brien, Dean Putney, Danelle Cunningham, Evan Barker, Graham Medlin, Hans Riesbeck, Helen Hegedus, Jerry Kearns, Jim Lesko, Jim Spofford, John Pollock, John Burdenbaugh, Keith O., Ken Altman, Les Howard, Lauren Bast, Mock Nerd, Malton Make, Mark Goebel, Matt Gromes, Michael Douglas, Michael Jones, and Michael Pecorini. Thanks to all of you for supporting the Cool Tools Show. We really appreciate it.